Okay, welcome everyone for the weekly discussion in English medium on Tuesday. We are going to have about 1 hour and we have appointed topic for the discussion. Before going to the appointed topic, I would like to invite anyone if anyone is having any other suggestion, topic or any interview reports to be reported. We can take a few minutes and then go to the Parayanavagge that we appointed one. So if you have, please take time for the sake of discussion.
Avasarai Ban, this is one report for today's session. With your permission, I'd like to present it.
Yeah.
Dear Bante, I am 17 years old and this is my lying down experience. I laid on my stomach, closed my eyes, and immediately I weight on my eyelids. I was tired prior to starting the meditation, and when I closed my eyes, I could feel the tiredness as a weight hanging over me. I tried to focus on my breathing, but soon found myself watching the tiredness. I don't know how long I was watching it for before I gave into it and woke up to my alarm. Please advise me. Teruvan Sarnai. This is from Onaya. That's the end of the report, Bhante.
Yeah, so when you are starting with the lying down situation, you have to expect, because it is inviting you to be lethargic, and of course for the relaxation it is good, but it is more towards a sleepiness, slimy nature. So therefore you have to, before going into the session, you have to understand the waking up position as well as the slimy position, congealing position. So therefore it is good for the relaxation. But if you are aware of the relaxation, if you are awakening into the relaxation, while relaxing you can be alert, you can be awakened. In brain waves, this is one part of the body, or eye signals, ear signals, they are calming down. But the vigilance and the diligence, sometimes they call theta waves, they are increasing. So there is two things are happening. One thing is bodily relaxation. No, the sympathetic nervous system is not taking any decision. But the parasympathetic things are happening. You can be aware, relaxation happens with the, that will give the maximum luxurious relaxation, but when there is nothing happen. So nothing happen and relaxation is two things the modern civilization cannot understand. They think the happiness and everything happened with the luxurious materialism. But you know, lying down, your eyes are not there, the visual objects not there, ear is not there, sound is not there, all the organs are almost shut. And therefore, if you are not developed mind, mind will be sloth and torpor. But the Buddha says, be aware, when there is nothing happen, there's a kind of a vigilance, kind of a diligence is increasing. If that is happening, position may be lying down, but you can understand the mind is awakened. Calming down happen in the physical body, basically the sympathetic nervous system. Basically the intentional activities will be reduced, but the mind knows how to find the relaxation within itself. So you are too young, you have to continue. Now you are 17, now I am 70, you are 17, I am 17. So I am very rhetoric and I can tell you, after so much of years, so you are better than me when you become 7-1, not 1-7. Because at the 17, I was just a bumpkin, nothing related to this kind of meditation of nothing. But it did no harm. I mean, I am so happy now, because don't manipulate. Just lie down and be aware when there is no manipulations. There's a one part of brain, one waves, are really, really become vigilant and diligent and awakening. that is happening and the body is becoming very calm. The Buddha explained him so nicely, unlucky enough, no Buddhists know about it. They are talking about total calmness or total awakening. There is no. This part is calming down, this part is awakening. So please take time and report to us. We are very happy to share with your sharing. We are appreciating.
Thank you, Bhante. There's no more reports.
Okay. So if there are no other things to be discussed, I would like to invite Venerable Buddharakkhita to continue with the place where we stopped last time.
Okay, so we were just getting to the last stanza in this sutta, but I might just go back over the 12th, the one just prior, so that we can approach the last one in a nice way. So the 12th stanza goes, because of a view or an opinion, a Veda master does not become conceited, for he does not identify with them, not led by kamma or by what is heard. He is not drawn by any abodes. For one detached from perception, there are no knots. For one liberated by wisdom, there are no delusions. But those who have grasped perceptions and views wander in the world, creating friction. So here in the last two verses, we can see that the Buddha brings together the two big threads that he is tackling in the sutta, which is the way that views enmesh people and the way that conceitedness enmesh people. And so this is a major theme of the Sutta Nipada, is the role of views on the one hand and the role of conceitedness on the other. So we have here what he calls a Veda master. So in the time of the Buddha, before the Buddha, there was this Brahmanic period, the Brahmins, and the Vedas were their sacred texts. And so here he's talking about a genuine Veda master, somebody who has penetrated knowledge, direct knowledge, not somebody who just knows it from books or can recite it from memory. At that time, and even to this present time, these Vedas are upheld as sacred texts that have been passed down through the aeons from the rishis. And, you know, so these doctrinal texts can be pulled out and kind of beaten over. You get beaten over the head with these ideas, or, you know, as if they're sacred directly from the god or something like that. So these are views that are held in great, in a kind of ironclad way. But here the Buddha is contrasting it with a true Veda master who is somebody who is not conceited, and they're not bound by views or opinions because they don't identify with them. So the heart of the matter here is that they don't have an identification with the views. They don't perceive themselves as superior, inferior, or the same as. So therefore, a view doesn't have any power over them, like I am better than you, and or I am inferior to you. And so not led by kamma or what is heard, he is not drawn to any abodes. So here, the abode is like your domain, the ground that you stand on, the ideology that you stand on. You're not drawn to defend any areas. You know, you don't need to defend, this is where I stand on this matter. Or this is my identity, for instance. Like, you know, I am Sri Lankan, or I am Irish, or something like that. I don't need to defend these identities. So this is very important, this idea of identity around location, or identity around group or clan or caste, or, you know, we find all kinds of ways to identify and to form a kind of an abode. And an abode is any place that we habituate, any place that we consider ours, mine. that kind of a way. An abode can have, you know, we can use this in positive or negative meanings. Like we describe the Brahma Vihara as an abode, the abode, the Vihara of the Brahmas. But this kind of an abode is here. We're not drawn to any abodes. Like even the good abodes, we're not drawn to, like the Brahma Viharas itself. We're not captured by the abode. For one detached from perception, there are no knots. So here again, perception is a view. It's a perception here, meaning the way I look at something. So how I perceive it. So when we have a very quite detailed meditative mind, we can see how perception is forming in the mind, that we go from a crude sensory object, like I might perceive something in my field of vision, and then I build up, oh, that is a human, or that is a male or a female, or that is a lay supporter, or it's a monastic. You know, I start to build up the identity of the object that I'm perceiving. So I go from this kind of coarse recognition to more and more detailed or more and more refined perception of what that object is. But here I am detached from perception, means I perceive the object, but I'm not attached to a view or an opinion or a conceitedness around that object. So for one liberated by wisdom, there are no delusions. So there are no delusions about what the object is. You know, they just see a scene, or that they know what they know. They're not adding a story on top. So in this way, we're talking about delusion as being kind of like a story that we add to the raw information that is in front of us, or we don't perceive clearly, so we fill in the gaps in our ignorance with a story. So for one liberated by wisdom, there are no delusions. But those who have grasped perceptions and views wander in the world, creating friction. So this is a very interesting point. He comes back to that it is these views and perceptions that we grasp onto that cause us to wander in the world. So I can perceive things as mine, or I perceive enemies as not mine. And I have views as a result. I build views on top of that, like I am better than, I am equal to, or I am inferior to. And I wander in the world creating friction. So this is the basis of friction between people, is this ego and conceitedness built on views and opinions. So this is a first run at these last, at the end of this sutta.
Yeah, the one before the last. I would like to present the Pali presentation. Na vedagu dithya namutya na manameti na hi tammatayo tammayo so na kammuna no pisutena neyo anupatito sa nivesanesu. There are very, how do you call, words. They are very quite boiled down words, and many, many interpretations possible. And so this interpretation is pertaining to this translator. What I am talking about is that the Buddha Jayanti translation, the senior Buddhist monks and Theravada monks, they give the translation. There may be some shades of meaning. Here the Buddha says, a person who has four noble truths, understanding, will never get carried away by views. Not by visuals, by sounds, smell, tasting and touching. Mutya, no, don't go into decide. They are adding some information but not decisive. Whatever you see is something new but not decisive. Whatever you hear, yes, you are hearing, but don't take seriously. So likewise, everything not leading immediately, you don't get carried away, you are not reacting too quickly. Whenever something I saw, I have some desire for that. So I am not going to be by desire. I know I have a desire. And I will get a view telling that I am so lucky person, that is why I got this view. So I am not going to assume. So assuming is the more key term. Last time also that is what I just wanted to take for today's discussion also. Tammayo. Tammayo means assuming. Whatever you see, you assume. I am lucky person or unlucky person. That's why I see, I saw it. That's why I saw a bad thing or good thing. That assumption, assuming nature is our personality. Tammaya. Tammayata is the word, as I mentioned last time, the Thai monk. He said that sum up whole teaching of the Buddha. Just like appamada, just like diligence. So whenever we see, whenever we hear, smell and tasting, touching, we try to assume or we try to attribute and we take a stand. I saw it. This is my seeing. So I get patent recorded that I am the person who discovered it. Bullshit. The Western world, everything. The Buddha discovered everything and at the end of this book, not right reserved. This is the only book on the earth, no right reserved. With this everything. All the other bullshit, everything is right reserved. Don't electronically or anything, don't copy without due respect. What nonsense. That is called tammeta. That is called assuming. I am the person who is well presented, I hold the idea, that is mine. So ultimately die with it and die for it. And we become disciples and say, I am a disciple, so and so. Buddha says, no relationship with you. If you are this thing, understand? That is the term Vedago, not related to the Hindu Veda. So these monks, they are quite against the Veda, the Hindu tradition. And this book is talking about the idealistic Veda person. That means Hindu person, no. Buddha used the word Veda. Vedagu means is expert in his whatever the skill. In Burmese tradition, Vedagu means professor. All the professors are known as Vedagu. Because he is the professor for that subject. So any Veda, any person who is Vedagu, worth calling Vedagu, has no view. He's having no ditthi and mana. For them, whatever the seeing is just seeing. Whatever the hearing is just hearing. When they are unassuming. Atamayata. So that is the worst thing I find in the artificial intelligence. This bloody shit. After taking drugs, thinking, I say, I discovered this, I connected this and that, and it's artificial intelligence. So I feel sick. They are not, they were mindful. If they are mindful, it's a completely opposite of it. Not that mindful people, after calming down, they can see the relationship and they can say these things can be assimilated. So I would say that if the artificial intelligence fellows are meditating, that will be better. Otherwise, we are blindly following artificial intelligence because utterly based on assumption. I am the person compiling this, coining terms, coining words. Nothing else in the Oxford University present day. Nothing happened in the Harvard University. They are just coining terms and selling to the third world countries. We people sell the lands and go there and come back and try to rule the Sri Lanka. They don't have rights. We are people from the earth, we are people from the land, and we are meditating, and we need no anyone's, instructions, because Buddha has given comprehensive, these bloody fellows, Tammaya fellows, assuming people, they never refer to the Buddha. This is my discovery. I think it is their partial nature, but this is talking about, if someone is an expert or professor in the term, they have no views. They have no assumption or conceit. And if there's a conceit, he knows this prop up happened due to the conceit. This is propping up happened, it is due to the view. No harm. Not that you must be completely free of view and perception, or sorry, the conceit. As far as you know, you can tell others, I'm sorry, I'm so conceited, I have this idea. That's my idea. No harm. But you are going to say, this is the truth. And I must be record that in the patent, and no one can copy my patent record rights. What nonsense. They are not humanistic. They are very narrow-minded fellows. Their discovery is not for humanity. They go for their wife and other kind of thing, and wife is sleeping with another woman, person. Even if he is getting the rights for the kind of thing. So therefore, tammeta is the word I just wanted to bring into the discussion. Whenever someone assuming, taken a stand, is difficult to wash and clean. He's got stuck. But we in the discussion, we can of course take a stand and say, I have that kind of a view, I have that kind of a conceit, but I don't hope you to follow me. This is my view. And I learn that view and the perception also with the interaction with you. Otherwise, I don't know. I have to interact with other people, then only they will teach me. So I have to be thankful, not to the conceit idea, not to the view. But I knew at least before the death, I know that I am a conceited. But these artificial intelligent fellows, they never lose conceit. They never lose the view because they want to make it commodity. They wanted to make money. And now it has been already introduced in many countries as a subject. And many people are teaching now. So people often asking me, what is my view regarding artificial intelligence? I say it's a concept. It's a wandering mind, daydreaming, fantasizing. Be mindful. So it appears like I am against artificial intelligence, but I am also using so much of artificial intelligence, high-tech and all the kind of things. I use them as a servant. I never let artificial intelligence come and interpret terms where I attribute it to the tammeta. Tammeta means reason by it, reason by view, reason by conceit. Tammeya, oh, it is just made out of steel, made out of copper, is ayomaya, chintamaya, likewise one phrase. And tammeya means whatever you see, you assume from that, you hear. But the expert person, he never take that kind of a stand. He says, I saw it. It will process later and will come into the thinking pattern, not immediately. So therefore, this Vedaku term and the tammeya, they are very crucial expressions. So they need detailed analysis. Not the karmen, not the sruten paminiyavi yute, not by doing, na kammuna, na sutena. By listening, you are not take this as a whole, as a new thing. You just incorporate that into the kind of thing. And therefore, he is not taken a stand, not based upon the views. And Trishna, there are three things, conceit, view, and the desire. And conceit is the worst because this is the last thing to go. Desire and views are not so deep. By so on itself, you remove the view. Sakala anagami itself, you remove the trishna. Mana is the very difficult, so we have to accept it. And once the mana happened, views and the trishna fighting. That is our internal conflict. That is our inner chatter. So by discussion, we have to understand by sharing with others. That is the what I just... that is why I asked last time also, please take that gatha into this time, because I thought of sharing it little further will be helpful for many. Then the last sentence. Sanya virattasa nasanti gantha. Have you completed last one also?
Yeah.
Yeah, the last one, Venerable Jnananda, quoted again and again, it's like a motto. When there is no sanya means taken perception And cognition and recognition happen with the perception. Whenever you have something cognized or recognized, you are sick with the perception. If there is no such, you take it as not so seriously, he will never had any conflict, no ganta, no hitch. Your hitch always with, you have taken some concept as a, you are driven by a concept, taken it hard and fast, then you are always fighting. And Punjabi Muttasa Nasanti Moha, if someone is understanding, it's a matter of communication. It's a matter of rhetorism. It's a matter of verbal conflict. Then he will not misunderstand people. He will not misunderstand books. He will not misunderstand what the people are talking. They are very superficial. So therefore, panya, those who have panya, no confusion. Sanyancha dittincha ye aggahesung. Anyone is taking this perception as hard and fast, and the view hard and fast, they always fighting with other people, go all around the world and arguing all the time. So with the media, with the social media today, everyone is talking about everything, not leading. They want everyone to listen to him, them. So they ask, please subscribe, please click this one. Next time also I will give another bucket of muck. So no one is taking care. Whatever the media we are developing, it won't make positive or negative, some changes are happening. So therefore, sanyanta dittincha ye aggahesung. Anyone is taking the perception and the view, they are always fighting. They are always debating. They are arguing. And present day, whole energy on the earth is misused for this debate and arguments. They have no chance to sit and wait. No chance to turn inward. Just chance to be simply mindful. Because of these arguments and everything, make them busy, even if they are closing their eyes. Even if they are looking inward, they can't. Because so much of agitation. So Pandita Sahib used to say, you just before going to sit, just talk 5 minutes with someone, and you can see at least after sitting 10 minutes that lingering talks are happening in the mind. So this is what the media is doing today. So without media, you are not a citizen. You are just a monkey, not a monk. So keep as much as possible. I mean, we can't do away with that, but understand. Therefore, if you're wise enough, whatever the people get mixed up with, people eat, amused with no harm. Because it is always the case. So don't worry about someone's misunderstanding or views. Don't think that your duty is to correct him. No. Mind your own business. Be mindful. That is what my motto. It appears little harsh. So if that's so, we can go to the next sutta, please.
So the next sutta is the Pura Beda Sutta, which is Bhikkhu Bodhi calls before the breakup. So just before I begin this is a subtle sutta, and I want to give a little bit of the background. So in quite an early time in the Buddha's realm, there was a conflict arose between the Kolian and the Sakyan clans, and it was a water dispute over rivers and water. So when the rivers would run low in water, they would dam the rivers to divert the water for irrigation, for crop growing. And, so there was a dispute over this water that was being diverted in the, during the drought or during this low period. So they were going to get into a conflict and a fight, and the Buddha intervened using his psychic powers, and he intervened sort of between them, and he told the history of the two different groups and showed how they were relatives. And as a result of this, 250 men from either side became bhikkhus, so there was 500 men. 500 means a lot of people. It doesn't necessarily mean exactly 500, but a lot of people got faith in the Buddha and decided to become bhikkhus. And then because of this, the Buddha was teaching them. He taught them various different suttas, and they became enlightened to varying degrees between Sotapanna and to Anagami, but they were not fully enlightened. And then he taught some more, and they became fully enlightened. And then the devas, in recognition of this kind of great feat by the Buddha to tame his own relatives, to bring them to the Dhamma, they also wanted to, a large group of them gathered around the Buddha, and they wanted to hear the teachings. And so the Buddha realized that this was going to be a difficult group of beings to teach. So he divided the devas into different dispositions according to their disposition, whether they were anger type or whether they were lustful types, whether they were deluded types, whether they were into like thinking, conjecture. So there were six different types of devas, and he taught six different suttas to the different according to their disposition. And he did another sort of psychic feat to help the teaching. So he formed a image of himself so that he could have a question and response. So there was, there was the Buddha, and then there was the psychic form of the Buddha, and the psychic form of the Buddha would pose the questions, and the Buddha would answer the questions. And he did this to kind of assert his authority to the devas so that they wouldn't find fault in his teaching, and that they could therefore grasp and apprehend his teaching quickly and easily. So this sutta that we're going to begin today was the sutta that he taught to devas who were, I think, lustful in disposition.
I would like to add that thank you for the reminding the history. The debate about the irrigation water was very iconic in the Buddhist life. And the Buddha says blood, and they are about to fight in both the banks, one thing from the mother's side, one thing from the father's side. Buddha is sitting in the middle of the river. He says, now you are going to shed blood. He says, blood is thicker than water. So therefore, both of you are relatives. So you are fighting for water. Ultimately, this thing can happen. So ultimately, they agreed. And as a sign that so much of young people got ordained. And the Rohini Nadi is the river's name. And during the drought side period, it's a heavy fighting for the water. Both of agricultural people. And then their enlightenment to be enhanced. And that is why the Buddha, creating another Buddha, and that Buddha is asking question. This all the question no human can ask. Human asking why dollars are fluctuating. And the inflation. Why the jobs are no jobs. Or unemployment. Bloody shit. And some present day, some good Buddhist says, we are unlucky enough because during the Buddha's time, you would have asked this question. Buddha would have given the solid answers. I think Buddha will slam you, telling that you bloody fellows always take an economical stand. But that is why the Buddha is creating another Buddha and asking. And the Purabeda is what you should do before the death. And everyone is asking why we are living. This is before Purabedo. What should I do because the breakdown and the death? And why we are living? Why did we come here? And what is the nonsense we are doing? And how much we are carried away by the day-to-day affairs? And the whole issue of coming on the earth and living as a human being lost. And two times I have delivered Whenever Chandratana listened to this talk while he was in Avyana, then only he decided to come to Nissanavani. He wrote the whole this thing and he published the book because he told that when I am listening, I was thinking about why should I become a monk? What is the purpose of becoming a monk and living in Avyana, living in here? So he wanted to make it something practical. So therefore, Purabhedha Sutta, maybe for the third time. And the main thing is, why should we live? What is the purpose of this living? How much we are carried away by this corona? How much we are carried away by the Chinese and Russian and American economies? How much we are carried away by this technology? How much we are carried away by the environmental pollution? And does that really affect your mindfulness? Who the hell can come and tell you that, please be mindful? No one. That is why the Buddha says only another Buddha can ask this question. Otherwise, people are taking this as a topic of the debate. What is the purpose of living? Why the God at last created the human being? And forget about the God. Now you become a human being in the Buddha disposition. What is your prime important responsibilities? It's completely gone. Government is pulling to one side, economists are pulling to other side, and the socialists are pulling to other side. Doctors, media, and lawyers killing, not allowing a split second. Your wife, your husband, your relatives, and your boss said, my mother used to say, we are close to Kandy, and Kandy, a lot of fish in the main, lake. And we put, flakes, rice flakes. They come and pick within 1 second. So just like our each and every thought moment is picked by so much of fish, we can't wait that to disappear. Soon you put disappear. The present moment is such. Completely disappeared. We are carried away by that idea, this idea, and modern ideas, Western ideas, Eastern ideas, past ideas, future ideas, so much so we are smart enough not to be mindful on the present moment. Purabhedo Vyupasanno. It's a main idea, and there are six that kind of character types. The Buddha is asking, the created Buddha is asking to depict, to show this kind of character type. They are always taking that kind of question, that kind of worries, and that kind of diseases, that kind of climatological situation, and they ruin and perish and die. They never think they have such a versatility, that they have such options. No. They become Sinhalese Buddhists. I must protect Sinhalese Sri Lanka, and I must protect Buddhism. Don't talk anyone to come and meddle with that. So you miss the bus. So Purabhedha Sutta, in that sense, it's a fairly long one. Thank you for the reminding the traditional history. And of course, they appear like a fabrication. There's no relationship to the content of the sutta with the fighting for water and the relatives. And 500 become half enlightened. They are fabrications, I mean. But anyway, give kind of a atmosphere under what circumstances the Buddha gave. So you have to understand the go into the crux. Before going to crux, all time, we have that kind of a nidana. Nidana means a historical background or case history. And thank you, Sudhu Amro, study these things and give us present us in the discussion. So that is all what I have to talk.
Yeah, so this is interesting that it follows from the previous one. If we remember in the previous sutta, Magandhya wanted to offer his daughter to the Buddha, and the Buddha basically insults the parents by saying that he wouldn't touch the daughter no more than he would touch excrement or urine. So in the religious life, there are different approaches to dealing with lust. So one is to look at the repugnant qualities. One is to look at how the 32 body parts are intrinsically disgusting. If you take them apart, there's nothing attractive there's nothing attractive about the guts or the hair or the skin or something like that. If you see them in detail, they're not attractive. It's only when we form a perception, we can form the perception of beauty. So this sutta is subtle. It's different in nature. So as Mahathera has mentioned, there is a nidana, as I've mentioned earlier on, as a background, so that in this case the Buddha was the psychic form of the Buddha was posing questions to the Buddha, and it was for the benefit of these devas who were lustful in disposition. So you can see this. These suttas are like a pair, like a twins. One is telling parents rather shockingly about why the Buddha wasn't attracted to their daughter. And here we're telling devas how not to be attracted to their own body or life. And we have to appreciate that devas are beings enjoying, you know, very good karma, very good intellect and health and long life and good situations. So they're really in a comfortable place in the world. And, you know, how do you tell these beings to not be lustful? And you can see that the devas are more refined. So sort of telling them something coarse like the 32 body parts doesn't quite work for them. So instead, the Buddha teaches them Marana Nusati, which is like reflection on death. Death is approaching. You know, what about the breakup of the body? Because even though you are in a good situation for this existence, for this life, it will come to an end, and then you will be subject to karma, subject to rebirth, subject to, you know, the fruit of your karma, meaning, you know, you can be in a good situation in this life, but in future lives it's uncertain. So he had to provoke these kind of lustful devas, those lustful in disposition, to kind of take it seriously what he was teaching them about. That the Dhamma is about solving a very difficult problem, which is like, what about the breakup of your body? What about the end? So I'll begin with the first, the posing of the question by this psychic form of the Buddha. So this Buddha says, how does he see? How does he behave? The one who is said to be peaceful, when asked by me, O Gotama, describe the Supreme Person. So, again, this is quite a refined question. He's asking to describe the qualities of the Buddha, the Supreme Person. He's talking about peacefulness, which is very attractive to these lustful kind of monks. So he's drawing them in. Like they're curious about, well, yeah, what's peaceful? What's nice? What are these beautiful qualities of this beautiful Buddha? You know, how does he look like? How does he behave? You know, so you can imagine like talking about your favorite pop star here, you know, or your favorite actor. You know, how does he, how does he see? How does he behave? You know, some very, very... attractive kind of, you know, this is to catch the attention of these kind of, as it's called, lustful in disposition. These are kind of people who like nice things, and they're in a very good situation. So the Buddha has to kind of answer this he doesn't directly answer this back, of course. So then the Buddha says in answer, devoid of cravings before the breakup, not dependent on the past, not to be reckoned in the middle. For him, there are no preferences. So here the Buddha immediately brings the crux of this is that, you know, what about death? But he doesn't say it in a kind of a way that is like coarse, like in the previous one, because for these very refined kind of beings, they would be offended by such references, and also like depending on their if there were very high beings like Brahmas and stuff like that, like they don't have a gut and they don't have other things like that. So their nutriment is a different kind of nutriment. So for these refined beings, you have to kind of provoke them with marana nusati on death, on the breakup. So here, the death is described as the breakup of the body after death. So again, even in modern times, like we can be very avoidant of mentioning death. So we'll just say, oh, somebody passed on. But here the Buddha avoids, you know, saying something like they passed on. Instead, he emphasizes that they break up. The body breaks up. That's the end of that existence or that beneficial time and place. It'll break up. So devoid of cravings before the breakup, not dependent on the past, not to be reckoned in the middle. For him, there are no preferences. So again, we come to this very important word of no preferences or no identification or, you know, this is the crux. And not dependent on the past. We're here talking about the past meaning, you know who I am, or not dependent on the past meaning my past karma, meaning I am enjoying the fruits of my past karma. So I'm in a good situation now, but it is dependent on the past, not to be reckoned in the middle. So we also, like from the past, we come to the middle, which is the present, but not to be reckoned on in the middle, meaning we will go on to break up. So you can't just look at I did good deeds in the past and now I'm in a great position and here I am and aren't I great? And the Buddha is saying, no, you're going to break up. You know, you're heading for a train wreck here. And you have to realize that Buddha is a person who is now devoid of cravings. And they're no longer dependent on the past good karmas. They're no longer sort of to be reckoned by the middle, by the present, how they are. And they don't have any preferences. So this is kind of getting down to the crux of the matter around conceitedness, around views and other things that we've been discussing already.
That by listening, I would like to add 2 points. The 32 parts, last Saturday it happened me to give 3 talks on the Satipatthana Sutta about the 32 parts. Usually in my talks, I am talking about the mindfulness, not to worry about the repulsivity of the body and kind of it's a kind of a conditioning of the mind. But anyway, it happened me to give. Yeah, then I highlighted few points who Pandita Sayadaw pointed out, because whenever a woman or a Benz car or an actor taken as one unit is beautiful, proportionate and kind of thing. When they're separated, not a single part. You can play, even take it as a plaything. This is a shit. The Buddha directly says shit. So take the summary or the, what is the, sum up talk, say the lambda letter. I don't know whether it's a lambda or so. This is the summation of everything. You write a letter like that?
Yeah.
Lambda. So when everything put together, very beautiful, very aesthetic. But once you remove reductionism, it's so repulsive. So we take myself, ego, very beautiful. But it's coming out of this, the body parts, perception, feelings, and my volitional activities and the mind. Individual parts, it's a real crime. So that is one thing. And the second thing is, Magandhya is good. She has done a good merit. But her merits are blocking her to go to the better. She is a good. Her goodness is so attractive, so possessed, so obsessed, it is utterly blocking the better. The devas are good. They are done with very past karma, according to the Buddhist teaching. Therefore, they are so attracted to that, so adhere to that, they never think about the Buddha. and the present day the first world country. They are good. I mean, they have technology, they have the whole countries developed and all the countries. But the suffering, exactly the same. So then, how can we share? Why can't they think about the liberation? No, they want to protect their heritage. Shit. So therefore, your goodness is the utter block for you to become better. So that is the skill you have to do, pura beda. Before you die, you have to understand there is a better thing. Not that you are good, bad. You're good. Why don't you think about the better? That is the term meaning of kusala. Kusala means you are always thinking about a betterment. So once you become, Pandita Sayadaw says, once you become good, don't throw your parties and entertain. Just see what are the things you would have done so that you would have gone to the better. So we are happy now. The country is in trouble and kind of thing, but we have our four requisites and we feel better off. But don't waste time. This don't waste opportunity. So therefore the question is, Katandasi Katangsi Lopasampornoti Vuchati, who is the calm and quiet man, person with the moral responsibilities and behavior? The Buddha says, person who knows before the death, I have to make sure not to hanker behind the past or not to get excited the future. Don't adhere to the present also. So it's a nice way of explaining mindfulness. Present moment. And whether even you enlighten, this is applicable. Whether you are deprived person, whether you are outcasted person, still it is applicable. So therefore, Purabeda Sutta is a knock on your head. Don't throw away a party, don't be happy. There is still something you have to do. If you think about the overall, the lambda situation, how do you say, sum total. Sum total everything, that is beautiful. But when you removed, so God created everything is good. They say artificial intelligence, intelligent design, but it's a shit. It's a Buddha says he can't say creator. Because he has created the utter ball of suffering. Everywhere. So he's a destructor. Not the normal destructor. Utter destructor. So therefore cessation of whatever the creation is a good. Because the creation is a suffering. So therefore don't look at the beginning of the creation. And that is you feel like killing the God. But if you see the cessation of suffering, our God is good. Because he has given the willpower, or my will, individual self, for you to think about the cessation. And easy to see the cessation of individual parts than the sum total. Because sum total is camouflage. That's the point where ego is happening. So you have to cut open and see, and you can take one by one. You are repulsive, sure, but you can take one by one. So therefore, Upanishad side put this repulsivity into three crux, cut into pieces, and see the totality as the aesthetic, and make it sizable work. But cut into pieces and you make a sizable, so you can handle with one part. And once that is done, you can go to the second part. Don't think you are better off now. You don't think that you are contented now. You have to do something. So these are the things. Usually in the repulsivity, we never think inside meditation. We see only the samatha part. But to Upanishad side, even then, very short paras you can read it in this life itself, in this very life book. So whenever the lust or desire happen, you have to have this tool of repulsivity. But once the lust happen, you can't develop repulsivity. You have to have already developed repulsivity meditation whenever the lust happens. But don't addict it into that because it is giving perversions in the mind. Because during the time of the Buddha, one day Buddha gave a big sermon about the repulsivity of the body. And he went for a silent sermon, silent retreat. When he come back, many monks committed suicide. And the population gone down. And Buddha is asking for Venerable Ananda, and there's something wrong. Where are these monks? Why, Bhante, you told that the whole life is repulsive and kind. They started killing themselves. And there's one special guy. He told, if you can give me the rope and the rope bowl, I'll cut your head. And one day he was washing his sword in the water and told, am I doing a good thing because innocent monks and they wanted to die and I am promoting him and facilitating? Then maybe it is wrong. And there's one god came walking over the water. He says, no, you are a facilitator. Why not that these monks are directly going to heaven? You please continue. So when the Buddha comes, then the Buddha says, repulsivity is with perversions. Anapanasati, never. So repulsivity is a prescription drug. It is not the over-the-counter. So someone has to recommend you, this is the word. But that time, when you are in trouble, you can't develop repulsivity. You must have already developed tactic. So therefore, it's called four guardian meditation. So I had to analyze it in a very pragmatic way. But in Sri Lanka, all the monks, they always think about the repulsivity of the body. Ultimately, they go for self-mortification. So they are not eating food. Instead, go to the doctor and ask him this disease and that disease, I can't sleep, I am no hunger and kind of thing. Instead, we ask them, why don't you eat little green leaves? No, I can't. But if you give a handful of drugs, that you can swallow. Utter foolishness, specifically for us monks. So before becoming a monk, Venerable Dhammikan, everyone told you are going to go to an asylum. All the people are mad, I mean, with views. They think they are superior being. They are with sila and everything. But they are self-mortification. They are always torturing themselves. Why can't we have a normal life, have amenities and have a healthy life? No, it is bad. Because of this repulsivity. Because it is overemphasized in Sri Lankan sasana. All the monks, village monks, they are not happy with mindfulness. They say it is very, it's just water-like. There is no substance. But the Buddha Anusati and Asubha Bhavana, very, very religious, full of merits. So this also related to Purabheda Sutta, something like that. But you have to think, we have to think it from the two sides, how the individual parts become a shit, and when the sum total come, when they come into the very gloss over and look and all the kind of, that is what we call pharmaceutical industry. This is the one deciding the governments. The Buddha Rakitamato says they are not deciding governments, but they have so much of powers. By investing so much of money, they can interpret everything. Because people are happy with the beauty. That's the advertisement today. But the monk, bald-headed and green, the brown robes, what repels, what attractiveness? I feel like corpse, Purabhedo. So they are making some kind of a threat to the beautiful world or the aesthetic world. So therefore, Brahmanas and others, they are not happy with the monks. They say they are kind of a revolution. They are implementing a revolution and yogis and kind of thing. They are living in the society, but they are not appreciating it. They are thinking, what should I do before my death? So these two points, the 32 body parts, one separated, completely different notion, put everything together like a jigsaw puzzle, something different. And the other thing is, we all are better, good people. But you are very idiots because we are not searching for better. We are so obsessed with our goodness, telling others, why don't you also come like us? We are good people, you see. Well, we miss the bus. It is not your main job. You have to think about better. That is what Venerable I have to add.
So the Buddha elaborates. He says, he is without anger, unafraid, not boastful, not regretful of speaking, with reflection, not restlessness. He is truly a Muni, controlled in speech. So, here's this emphasis on speech, because speech is very neighboring to thought. So not only is is a Muni, an enlightened supreme person, without anger, unafraid, not boastful, not regretful, of speaking with reflection, not restless. He is truly a Muni controlled in speech. So there's the inner speech of the mind, and then there's the outer speech of the mouth. So there's always this emphasis in the Buddhist texts on speech as being very close to the nature of the thinking of the mind. So to be without anger, to be free of anger, to be unafraid. And again, it's to be seen and experienced in one's life how fear and anger come together as emotions. So when we're afraid, we want to run away. And when we're angry, we want to fight. So these are kind of two sides of the same coin of the fight or flight response. So the physiology is the same in the body. You know, we have adrenaline, and we get the blood is going out to the limbs, and we want to fight. We want to run away. So the only difference between fighting and running away is whether we perceive the object, that we can defeat the object by fighting, or if the aggressor can defeat us, then we need to run away. That's the only difference, really. So again, in contrast to anger and fear is this sort of boastful quality. So boastful is again this kind of superior or making puffing up. So not regretful. So that's kind of contrasting these two ideas of boastful, boasting on the one hand and regret on the other hand. So these are also kind of subtle qualities of the mind as we get into meditation after anger settles down, after we deal with this kind of lust and anger, then we tend to come to sloth and torpor and regret and remorse. So again, we're talking here about how these qualities of mind come together, and they come together in an order. Normally, when meditators come, they have to deal with lust and anger, and then over time, as they calm down within the monastery, then they have to deal with a desire to be somebody important, or you know that they have regret and remorse. So you have these kind of narrations and stories going on in their mind. Of speaking with reflection, not restlessness. So this is again very important. We speak with reflection. So again, we're bringing mindfulness into our speech. We're not reacting to the other person or to the other party. We are speaking with reflection. Not restlessness. So. Again, this restless quality is like restlessness and remorse, and it's in contrast to reflection. Like a reflection, meaning here, like the reflection on a water, on a pool of water, it would reflect the trees around. So to just be a reflection of the good qualities of the mind, to be a reflection of the people around us, not restlessness. You know, if you look at a water that is restless or being disturbed, it doesn't reflect. He truly is Muni, controlled in speech. So here again, this Muni is a wise person or a mendicant, and they are controlled in speech. I think I much prefer the word managed, but yeah, controlled in speech. And so this is the first sutta here that we're, our first stanza, that we're really getting into the attributes. And he starts with speech and the importance of speech and how it reflects the inner speech of the mind. And to tame this is a great difficulty. You know, it's a great skill to not just be controlled in speech externally, but more importantly, to be at peace internally in one's speech.
So it is time to stop. And even the first stanza, even though it is talking about the mindfulness, not to barrage the future and the past, and says the final task is to, before the death, you must be free of tanha. It's a great task. And the second thing is external talk and internal talk. And recently in the UN conference, I try to break the attention about the external talk about the environmental crisis, but of the internal talk. You have tanha mana ditti. With that, you try to sort it out with the United Nations. You have nothing to do with yourself. But when reflect back, come back to this thing, all the religious master says, answer is lying within. So this is referring to that. So therefore, I hope next time we will discuss with the, starting with the second stanza, and by that time we may have some more reflection for us how to think about get rid of tanha before the death. Thank you very much for the participation.